Letting that last note have its little air, a little bit of reverb.
I take notes from you.
Good.
Sometimes when I feel like
you
taking that note.
Listen, when I tell you how to be a professional broadcaster.
I'm not hitting the mic. I'm just fixing the mic.
Because now is the time to be doing that.
Well, it was
while
loose.
Recording.
It was
is
loose.
Best.
It was all like jiggledy.
Mm-hmm. Great.
How are you, Alonzo Duralde?
I'm kind of tired, Dave White.
You're Alonzo Duralde of the rap and What the Flick. And also Outfest, which I will ask about in just 1 second, because this is it's relevant to the interests of
yes.
the listeners and who are listening to this podcast of the cinema.
Yes.
And I am your co-host.
Dave White.
Yes.
Of movies.com and occasionally of KCRW's Unfictional.
Please. Occasionally.
It's
been, when was the last time I was on there? October.
But they rerun you a lot.
They rerun me sometimes. I mean, I'm not gonna brag, but I am the star of that show.
Dave had to get up to see to our delicious bacon.
Yeah.
Which is probably the best reason I've ever had to hit pause on this show.
Well, there were those times where one of us had to burp.
I know, but that wasn't nearly as awesome as you
cough,
bacon.
Have a coughing fit, or
those were necessary pauses. This was a valuable one because it means I get to eat bacon later.
You do when our friends come over. We have friends in town.
We do.
And are they Outfest people doing Outfest?
No. There's some visiting, like the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus is doing some Harvey Milk tribute concert thing at Disney Hall. Why everybody chooses to do this stuff during Outfest just always astounds me.
Out of the way, gays.
Why is American Cinematheque screening, you know, The Devils on Sunday night when it's Outfest?
Out of the way, gays.
Everybody knock it off.
Everybody get out of the way of the gays.
We own...
Gays need to get out of the way of the
We own the gay gays. During the run of Outfest.
You think you do.
All your gays are belong to us.
So you've been outfesting all week.
I have, which means I've seen very few new movies, unfortunately.
You're kind of a whiner.
What?
Yeah, every day you're just like, oh, I'm so tired.
I'm out there busting my hump to put food on the table. And
guess what?
The thanks I get.
Guess what? Me
what?
Too. Me too. Also, I actually am the one that puts the food on the table after cooking it.
Yes.
Such as this bacon you're about to enjoy.
That's true. But, you know, I can bring home the bacon, and you can fry it up in a pan.
No. I make my own money.
Yes, you do.
It's a small sum of money. But I make it.
Yes.
Out of dirt and glue.
No, I generally speaking, I feel like we, outside of the house...
And my deep insights...
Are putting in an equal effort.
Regarding but cinema.
During Outfest, I just feel the weight of the world upon me, because it's exhausting to put on a film festival. And I'm part of like a,
you
a,
actually
a
have
team.
More. You actually have more out-of-the-home jobs than I do.
Quantitatively, yes.
Yes. You're running around doing a million things. You're Outfest dude... You're in the office twice a week,
yeah.
at least.
Yeah.
You're the rap dude.
Right.
You're the What the Flick dude.
Mm-hmm.
Soon you're going to be...
Another thing.
Another thing that's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. I'm happy to be the person that actually fries it up in the pan, because I'm good at that.
You are.
And...
You are also bringing home your own bacon, yes.
And... No. We're not even having a discussion about who brings home more bacon.
Oh, okay.
That's dumb.
All right.
You bring home more bacon than I do.
It is communal bacon. We have a shared bacon checking account.
One person, anytime people are married, one person always works outside the house like more or just simply makes more money at what they do.
I guess. Yeah.
And when you're two freelancers,
it comes and goes.
It comes and goes for both parties. And yeah. Currently, you're the breadwinner, and I'm the butler.
Neely. Last night was pretty cool, though, I have to say. We world premiered this movie called Tiger Orange at the Ford.
Yeah.
Which is very nice. It was a nice movie about two brothers from a small town, both gay, one sort of outspoken and, you know, left and went to L.A. to find his fortune. The other one kind of mousy and closeted and stayed in town to run the dad's hardware store.
Right.
I already
like the hardware store one better.
the L.A.
Mostly because I really super love hardware stores.
Well, I know you do.
And they are great places where I can go find all the things I need to fix the things that are broken in my house.
Well, the L.A. brother is played by...
That's what's so great about a hardware store.
The L.A. brother is played by Frankie Valenti, best known...
Oh, it's not a documentary?
No. It's a drama.
No. I'm already bored then. God,
can I get a story out without stomping all over it? The L.A. brother is played by Frankie Valenti, who is also perhaps better known to our homosexual listeners as adult film star Johnny Hazard. And he's really good at this.
What? He's acting in not naked movies now?
Correct.
Is he still doing naked movies?
I don't know. I don't know that he's necessarily given up on that entirely.
You know, I think I watched him have sex once. Like, right in up close and in person.
When you were working on a
PA? No, when I went to interview that big famous porn director. What's that guy's name? The one that was...
Shishi LaRue?
Shishi LaRue, yeah. I went to interview him one day, and I thought it was going to be, you know, like meeting Clea Duvall for coffee at Starbucks, because that's generally where, when I used to do interviews with people, that's generally where we wound up meeting. And
you went on the killing floor.
I went, yes, I went to the warehouse of boning, and it's their offices and the sets and the offices. Everything is in one big building.
Right.
And it's like a
porn co.
Yeah, it's like a 10-minute drive from our apartment, too, by the way.
Of course, yes.
It's not in the valley. You would think this would be in the valley, but it's right smack in the middle of West Hollywood. And so I go to his office. He's got all these great posters. Movie posters in his office, like Straight Jacket and stuff.
Oh, of actual movies.
Okay, right. Actual, no, not, do they make posters for porn movies?
If you're the director, you might have one made. I don't know.
I don't know. No. Like non-porn.
Gotcha.
Yes. Yeah. Old movies.
Right.
So we just start the interview, and he's in his office. He's like, okay, I'm going to go direct a scene now. And I was like, I will follow you. And then I'm pretty much just sitting right next to him while he's directing the scene, and these two guys are doing dirty sex things to each other on a bed. I think one of them was Johnny Hazard.
Well, anyway.
He's a little short dude with the tattoos, dark hair, right? Is that the one we're talking about?
Yes.
All right, yes. Then that I think, was...
Okay, well,
in fact, Tim, if I am not mistaken, the setting was a log cabin.
Funny. That's the setting of this movie.
Really?
Seriously, there's a log cabin in it.
Maybe they filmed parts of it at this warehouse.
I don't think so.
That sex warehouse.
This was all shot, like, in Central California somewhere.
All right.
Anyway, he was quite good.
There's a lot of buffalo plaid on the bed, if I recall.
Ah, well, that's a great look.
Properly. I don't remember anything about the sex, though. Like, I just...
You remember the Pendleton.
Yeah, because I was like, yeah, okay, sure, porn dudes are doing it, whatever. Like, because it's not...
It's the least sexy thing in the world.
It's not horny, baby.
The least sexy thing in the world is watching people have sex on camera.
You're sort of like just standing there...
Because they're at work.
Looking at it, and the director's yelling things at them to do, like, which all gets somehow edited out later.
Right. It's covered up by...
Well, there's... No.
Well, they don't... Not the boom chakawa, whatever the, you know...
In any case...
The crappy porn music is.
I don't know who the other dude was. I don't remember anything about this.
Well, Tiger Orange, he's good. He gives a...
Let's talk more about hardware stores.
He gives a very good performance. And what I was going to say, what was kind of cool, though, is... So, and Dave Park, who I think you might have met once, he... Remember those? I did a couple of those YouTube things for Pivot. where we talked about, like...
I don't remember what that is.
There was, you can look them up on YouTube. Right. There were these things that or it was Participant Media, their thing where we talked about, like, you know, do gay movies advance gay rights?
All right.
You know, a couple things like that. Anyway, the guy who hosted those segments, who's very sweet, has a small role in the film as the small-town cop. Anyway, as we were all leaving the Ford... you know, we're like kind of standing up at the top of the back, you know, talking and getting ready to leave. The fireworks from the Hollywood Bowl started.
Hooray!
Yeah, and it was this very kind of magical moment of just like, whoa, you know, we just saw
a magical moment that you guys stole from the Hollywood Bowl.
Yes, we just thanks.
It wasn't your magical moment to have.
You didn't
pay for that magical moment.
You know what? If we paid for it, it wouldn't be magical.
Other people bought those tickets for those fireworks. You were pirating those fireworks.
We were magic adjacent then, whatever. It was still a nice moment. Stop ruining everything for me. I have to take my little moments.
That's my job.
I have to take my little moments of transcendence where I can find them. It's been an exhausting week.
But it's done tomorrow, or you're done tomorrow.
Sunday is the, well, this is today, because I'm where this is posting on
then
Sunday.
Then you can quit all your belly aching.
I will never quit all my belly aching. You need to know that right now.
You didn't see anything this week except for Sex Tape.
Sex Tape,
which is garbage.
Oh, it sure is.
There's only one thing worse. I mean, it's not worse, because watching those dudes bone in the context of interviewing Chi Chi LaRue was not a bad thing.
Right.
I was not like, when's this going to be over? You know, like, I was just sort of like, oh, those guys are doing sex things to each other. And
it's about as erotic as watching a car get assembled.
Well, they were happy. It wasn't like they weren't into it.
No,
it's
no,
not
no.
like they were bored or
no,
having,
no, no.
you know, drug dealer pimps on
no,
the side
but,
being like,
but,
get to work.
But when you're, but when you're
like,
there.
They were having fun. They were enjoying themselves.
But still, when you're
clearly.
There, you're just, there's that feeling of, I'm in someone else's workspace right now.
Yeah, it's like you're visiting. It's like when your mom takes you to work. And you're sitting there in the office with a coloring book.
And maybe somebody lets you play on the typewriter, but, you know.
And the interview was effectively sort of halted during the moments when he was actually directing. Like, I kept my tape recorder on so I could hear the things he was yelling at the dudes to do, like, cheat out, you know, like, move your body out so we can see more of your wang. And the,
find your light.
Yeah. Like, you know, calling for the dude to get the fill light in and stuff like that. You know, things like that. It was not, you know, it wasn't torture.
No.
Sex Tape the Movie, however, was torture. You know, it's weird. I wasn't even thinking about Sex Tape the Movie when I brought up the whole interviewing Chi Chi LaRue.
No.
This is a brilliant segue.
Yes, I was talking about something else, and I wasn't thinking about Sex Tape either.
But
I may never think about Sex Tape again after we have this conversation.
Let's not think about it ever again after we have this conversation. What a piece of garbage.
I will give the movie credit for a couple of things.
Tell me what those things
there
are.
There were a few...
So I can maybe be reminded.
There were a few gags early on that I thought were kind of funny in this sort of like lengthy montage of setting up how they used to, you know, be crazy, like having sex all the time and in all the places. And then they got married and they got kids and that didn't happen anymore. And then once the not very funny farcical setup unfolds, there is that great sequence in Rob Lowe's mansion where he does coke with Cameron Diaz and she starts babbling like an idiot while Jason Segel is running around fighting off the guard dog. That was kind of funny. And then it was never funny again after that.
Rob Lowe's funny.
Rob Lowe's funny.
Rob Lowe is on a roll, really. Yeah.
Ever since Wayne's World.
Well, I was going to say, really, Parks and Rec.
Yes.
From the moment he got on Parks and Rec and I got over my disinterest in him. Because unlike Ethan Hawke, who I sort of used to actively dislike, now I'm into what he does. Like
I'm cool with
Ethan Hawke now.
And he's relieved to know that.
I didn't care. I know. He's sighing with relief. I just didn't care about Rob Lowe. There was nothing about him that interested me.
I like comedy Rob Lowe.
I liked comedy Rob Lowe until I saw him on Parks and Rec.
Wayne's World didn't like...
Wayne's World, he was fine in Wayne's World, yeah. But that was, you know, over 20
like
years.
I never watched West Wing. I certainly never watched Dr. Vegas or whatever. But if he was going to be in a comedy, I'd be like, okay, I'm in. If it's Rob Lowe doing a comedy, oh my God. Rob Lowe in Behind the Candelabra.
Yeah, exactly. That's the other thing. Like, in Behind the Candelabra, he's astounding.
Oh,
and,
God, brilliant.
Did they already give Emmys out for that yet or whatever?
They did, and he, I don't even think he got nominated, which is
He didn't
really
even
annoying.
Get nominated
I'm
for
not sure,
Emmy?
But I know he didn't win.
Like, sometimes I see somebody, I'm like, please just give him an Emmy right now.
Yeah.
Or all of them at once. Right. Like, that was the most amazing thing that I've ever seen him do. By the way, last week I said amazing on this podcast like four times.
Oh dear.
I'm going to stop doing it.
Okay.
I want you to make a swear jar for it, please.
Fine. For you saying amazing.
Because it's a crutch.
And me making Mystery Science.
I normally don't say that word a lot, but I don't know. There's just like this little rut that I'm in right now.
Sometimes it pops up. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I like to switch out with extraordinary every so often, just to kind of not say amazing.
I'm just going to... Real good.
There you go.
That's my other go-to, but I don't mind. I don't get tired of that
no,
one.
No.
And I don't think it sounds bad.
It's ageless.
But, all right. He's real good in his 5 minutes of this film. How many minutes?
Ten, maybe. But yeah, so basically what that means is when Sex Tape comes on cable in 3 months, like, fast forward, watch the Rob Lowe's house part, and then delete.
It's boring. It's not funny. It looks bad. It's an ugly looking movie.
Yeah, it's choppily directed and paced.
That's insulting.
Yeah, and
about then, all the things that people do sexually.
And it has the gall to, at the end of the movie, then like deliver this sermon about
that's the
how,
part that's insulting.
How sex tapes are bad. Yeah. And how that somehow if you make one, that means that your relationship is going in the wrong direction, or you wouldn't have felt the need to do so in the first place. I'm like, shut up, movie called Sex Tape, you know, that just spent
you
90
can buy
minutes.
Ours for $1.99 from linoleum-knife.com.
We'll be making it
as soon as Outfest is over. We'll get on that.
God, no.
We're going to call Chichi LaRue.
Yes.
Would you come over and direct us?
There's not enough cheating out in the world. Yeah, this movie is really disappointing and a waste of funny people. I mean,
Jason Segel
and Cameron Diaz are game. You know, yes. I think they were up for it, but
right.
They're just not given a lot that's pretty funny.
Rob
Corddry and Ellie Kemper are
Rob Corddry
moments.
Says some funny things
yeah.
about Lincoln, the movie Lincoln.
Right.
That's funny. The funniest Cameron Diaz has been recently was in The Counselor.
Yeah, which I still haven't seen.
Oh, man. The Counselor is so great. And, like, when I first saw it, I thought, what a weird, freaky movie this is. I think I like it. And the more I think about it in the past year, the more I think, what a kind of brilliant movie that was.
I need to see the director's cut on Blu-ray.
And she's great in The Counselor with her little silver tooth and stuff.
Yeah, I get the impression she's giving the Anthony Perkins in Crimes of Passion performance.
Pretty much, yeah.
So yeah, Sex Tape, that's it. There's
all right, here are the other two movies that came out this week. There's The Purge, Anarchy,
mm-hmm.
which is I'm into.
Okay. But you liked the first one.
I also liked the first one, which apparently makes my opinion meaningless about this one.
It puts you in a minority.
It does. Here's the reason I like these films. Killing. It's a whole bunch of killing.
That's really all it takes for you.
There's a whole bunch of killing in these movies. And I also love the idea of, I love the concept of people being trapped in a place and absolute chaos and insanity going on just outside the door.
Hmm.
Like, and they have to, it's that Night of the Living Dead sort of thing where you have to keep the monsters out of the house.
Right.
That was the first one.
The first movie.
And what you learned in the first one is that rich people who live in McMansions with super sweet security systems are going to die in the Purge. And so your security system means nothing. Then, in this one, you learn that if you are poor and a knuckle cracker on the microphone and you live in the urban area of Los Angeles in a place where there are rats
downtown,
you're also going to die. But before you die, you have to run around downtown like it's Escape from New York and be led by Frank Grillo, who's been in 1,000 different things. As a somewhat generic tough guy up until this point, and now he's a somewhat less generic tough guy, he really gets to kind of shine here because he's really grumpy and angry during the whole film. And
you may remember him as Robert Redford's key flunky in Captain America the Winter Soldier.
And also he was in The Gray. He was one of the guys that survives the crash initially, but then gets like eaten by a wolf. And so... this one has more on its mind than the first one. The first one, you didn't understand what was going on outside or why the things that were happening were happening.
The first one, when I said on What the Flick, I didn't review this movie because I didn't see it, but we were talking about it, and I said, the first movie is sort of like if you set up the entire Star Wars universe and then had the whole movie take place in the cantina. Like, there's this whole big thing about they introduce the notion of there's this new government and they have this purge once a year, and it's what saves the economy, and you know, all crime is
legal.
Keeps
the crime down during the rest of the year.
Yeah, it has like all this sort of, you know, there's this crazy setup. And it's like, okay, well, that sounds weird and interesting. What would that world be like? Oh, we're not going to tell you. It's going to be in Ethan Hawke's house.
In this one, they tell you the world a little. They tell you a little more and give you a little better feel for what is going on outside in the world, not just on Purge Night, but in general. And the thing is that there's this weird quasi-religious government has stepped in to take over. Because, and it must be some kind of religious, because people pray about how great the Purge is. They pray before they purge. Mm. You know, thank you. Thank you, dear the Purge. Thank you for the Purge. And
have you heard the good news about Purge?
And then you learn that the government is actually pretty evil because they send out teams of professional killers to help the Purge because a lot of people aren't purging enough.
People aren't wearing enough hats.
And then what they mean by that is they go and get more poor people. Because what you've learned in this film now is that it's an effort to reduce poverty by eliminating poor people. So it's got some ideas in its head about fascism and racism and, you know, feudalism and
our world
income
today.
Inequality and stuff like that. And the dude from The Wire,
Michael K. Williams.
He's the leader of the rebellion, which I assume in Purge
3.
We will see or is it, as I called it in my review, The Purge Lake Wobegon. They're going to take The Purge rural the next time around. They're going to show what it's like in cute little small towns where everybody likes each other.
The Purge, and there's Grover's Corners.
Pie-eating contest, yeah. So, this one is as ridiculous and as trashy, and all the metaphors are, you know,
hand-fisted.
They're sort of nodded. The movie sort of nods at the metaphors and moves it along. They're sort of like, we have a point, but look, here's more chasing and more killing. Look at this guy in the mask. Isn't he scary? So, when I walked out of the theater, and I hate doing this. I hate walking out of a press screening and talking to any film critic, because during the movie, I just kept looking at everything, thinking, "Oh, this is, you know, John Carpenter kind of, you know, Escape from New York kind of stuff." Sure. And I walk out of the theater, and I walk right past Claudia and Manola,
Claudia Puig and Manola Darling,
and they're sitting. Claudia Puig lent me her pen, by the way.
All right.
So thank you, Claudia Puig of USA Today, for lending me your pen. I brought a pen to the screening, and then it was out of ink.
No. Oh no.
It was a pen that I got off of your desk, too, by the way.
The
desk you never clean, and so you leave things that should be trash on the desk.
You fall into my pen trap.
No, what it just means is that I need to come in once a month and clean your desk.
And check the pens.
And check the pens. Oh, I'm going to.
You do that. Knock yourself out.
Yeah. I go, "Hey, y'all." And Manola says, "John Carpenter lives, man." And I just went, "La, la, 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 la. Don't say these things to me." Because now it's like, oh, good. Now she's going to write this in her New York Times film review. And I'm going to look like a copier in my own review. But then I thought, you know what? Screw it. I'm just putting it in my review.
I would imagine the two of you aren't the only ones to have...
I know, but that's the reason I don't like...
Yeah, no, that's why I don't read other people's reviews before I write mine.
This is why when all y'all are out in a circle... you know,
expounding.
You know, yeah, talking about stuff after a movie, I go to the bathroom, and then I wait. Have you noticed how I always wait like 5 feet outside of the circle, waiting for you to...
I don't do that.
Hop along.
You have broken me of the habit of talking to people afterwards, yeah. And it's a good thing. I don't like to muddy the water with other people's opinions.
Yeah. So,
what else opened this week?
So I like The Purge.
Uh huh.
I'm going to say it. I really like The Purge. I like the first Purge. I like the second Purge. I'm ready for the third Purge and the fourth Purge and the fifth Purge. All the Purges, you can keep purging. I am happy to...
Should I get you a Just Keep Purging sweatshirt?
Yes.
Okay.
And someone earlier on Facebook this week said that they remember us all going to see it at the drive-in.
Yes.
And they're still annoyed. It's like, dude, I didn't make you A, go to the drive-in, or B, well, okay, we did choose The Purge.
I think The Purge was like the second movie, wasn't it? Or was it the first one? I can't remember.
It was like The Purge and something else.
Yeah.
But wasn't it The Purge and Fast 6?
Yeah, it was the second movie after Fast 6, wasn't it?
I thought Fast 6 was the second movie.
Oh, maybe. I don't remember.
Anyway, wasn't that the double feature, though?
I believe it was.
So, that's a brilliant night at the drive-in as far as I'm
pretty
concerned.
Much.
And, but, you know, some folks just don't like The Purge.
What are you going
to
do?
They need to be purged.
Yeah. What else opened this weekend?
Planes, Fire, and Rescue.
Oh, yes. Which I wouldn't have minded seeing because I liked the first one okay.
I did not. I was bored by the first one, which was meant to be a straight-to-DVD situation and then somehow wound up in theaters and made a lot of money. And now there's another one.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it would appear that someone involved in making big decisions about Planes was as bored as I was by the first Planes because it's almost like this one is a reboot in that they have taken Dusty Crophopper, the crop duster with the dream that really, 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 really wanted to be a racing plane.
Yes, and he believed in himself.
And he believed in himself. And then became a racing plane. Right. And guess what? He won the race in the Planes movie.
But he was also a good sport.
So now, because that's also always the plot of the Cars movies, they had themselves, you know, painted into a corner of, oh, good, now we've got a Planes movie that's the same as the Cars movie. And we've got Cars in the Plane movie.
Right.
That interact with the planes,
right.
And everyone's going to fall asleep and die of boredom because we're just going to keep doing this.
That hasn't stopped them from making the Cars franchise.
So here's what happens in Planes, Fire, and Rescue, because no adult who listens to this show is going to go see it unless you have children, and no child is listening to this podcast unless...
Even though it's clean.
Unless you're Kurt Holman's daughter.
And even she is probably too old for Planes, Fire, and Rescue.
I guarantee you she's too old for Planes, Fire, and Rescue and does not care about Planes, Fire, and Rescue.
Right. What happened?
My brain just went blank.
You were
going
to explain the plot of Planes,
Fire, and Rescue. Something interesting happens.
Ah.
Dusty nearly crashes in the first like 15 minutes of this movie.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little harrowing, actually. Like, it's kind of frightening. You watch it happen. You're like, is he going to crash? What's it going to do? What's happening? And it turns out that his engine, there's this some kind of something box in his engine, is obsolete and out of production.
Ah.
Which is the same thing as obsolete.
Yeah.
And they can't get a new one.
Not even on eBay?
Not even on plain eBay.
Mm.
And they can't build him a new one because it's impossible. So he can't race anymore. So he has to do something else. So he has to figure out what he's going to do with his plane life. Mm-hmm. So he becomes a fireman.
Yeah.
And he learns how to be a fireman, and then he becomes a fireman, and then there's a big fire, and he saves other cars from the fire. The end.
Great.
Also, in the middle of the big fire, he super totally does... Did I say the middle?
Yes.
In the middle of the big fire, he super totally crashes.
Ooh.
And you think he's dead, which is terrific. But then, you know, they fix him and rebuild him, and they build him a new
box,
engine box thing. So now he can be a super fast racing fireman.
Wow.
Yeah.
That dusty.
Look, if I'm 3 or 4 or 5, holy cow, I'm super into this.
And I want the bedspread.
This is a fine new direction for this series to go in.
All right.
Screw racing. No more racing for this dude. Let him just rescue stuff. That's the end of my discussion of Planes, Fire, and Rescue.
Also, an opening in L.A. this weekend, which opened in New York about a month ago, is Eric Rohmer's A Summer's Tale.
From 1996.
Yeah. When I saw it in 1996 at the Toronto Film Festival, it was A Tale of Summer. But somehow it has become A Summer's Tale. I guess to cash in on...
What's the French? Is it conte or conte?
Un conte d'été.
Right.
It's part of his Tales of the Four Seasons, which is a cycle of his I really liked.
Yes. And for some weird reason, it sat for 18 years undistributed in the United States.
That's very bizarre. But
played all over Europe.
Yeah.
And the France. And, you know, was enjoyed by many. Mm-hmm. It's probably available on DVD in Europe as well.
Totally.
But now, finally... In a digital restoration, after 18 years, it has United States distribution thanks to Kino.
No.
No?
Yeah, no.
Maybe? Kino?
I don't think
who?
It's Kino. Oh, man.
Somebody.
I got to look it up now. It's not Kino.
All right, maybe not Kino. I'm dumb.
But no.
I went to see it.
I did actually see this movie back in the day, and I loved it, and then
rewatched it recently.
I wondered why it never came out, and then I got to see it again when they released it, and it's still great.
It is still great. We're not going to talk too much about it right now, because I'm going to write it up for linoleum-knife.com as part of my...
Big World Pictures.
Oh, okay, sorry. As part of my summer movies series that... now I've written about two films, 1960's Chronicle of a Summer and 1976's Lifeguard. The Lifeguard piece just posted this week to linoleum-knife.com.
And you've seen everybody talk about those movies in conjunction, but really I think Dave puts a unique spin on it.
I do.
No one ever talks about those movies in conjunction. But you do so very well.
I do.
You do.
Talk about all the things in conjunction.
So Dave will be reviewing it on linoleum-knife.com. You can read my review at therap.com. But it's great, and if it opens near you, you should totally go see it.
It is about this dude.
It is the
Melville Poupeau.
Melville Poupeau, the floppy-haired, much younger than he is now, Melville, 18 years younger.
That's just a mash of curly hair on top of his head.
And Amanda Langley, who is Pauline at the Beach, another Rohmer film.
He's got three ladies.
Yes. All the while claiming that he can't get any. That he is unlovable.
He doesn't get any either, because that's the great thing about this movie, is that it's nonstop about the promise of sex and a kind of, like, player... Or operator.
Operator type.
quality that he wishes existed inside himself. And either he's not forceful enough, or he's picking all the wrong women, because none of these women give him sex.
But at the same time, he actually uses this sort of sad sack, unlovable shtick to make women interested in him.
Yes.
And it works... up to a point.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to watch.
It's a movie about the lack of commitment to anything on the part of some people.
Right.
And maybe about more things, which I'm still sort of sorting around in my head, because I've only just now seen it the once.
Right.
And all of Eric Rohmer's films, the people talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. Mm. And the things they talk around are as important as the things that they're doing.
They discuss, yeah.
And he even famously once said that what his characters are thinking is more important than what they're doing.
Sure.
And that's a paraphrase, but...
This is dialogue that really does reveal something. It's funny, because I was trying to find my review, and I Googled, you know, like, my name and Rohmer, and my review of Funny People popped up. Because I talked about how, in the first few Judd Apatow movies, how... there's a lot of talking, but at the same time, it's also what they aren't talking about, or what they, that is revelatory. And I didn't like This Is 40, but the films that he made before that, I really kind of feel like it's this crazy hybrid of Eric Rohmer and Kevin Smith.
Yes,
where it's sort of like dudes using kind of penis jokes as a deflector, and at the same time talking about the stuff that's going on or not going on in their lives. But yeah, Eric Rohmer is one of my favorite directors, and so it is an unexpected treat to have a new movie from him since he passed away several years ago.
The only non-treat was just how this is a treat for Lemley because it was packed.
Yes,
at this screening. But not a treat for me because
you had to sit next to people.
I had to sit next to another human being that I didn't know.
Oh no!
Yeah, he was a dude in a tracksuit.
Yeah,
and I was. He walked up and he's like, "Is that seat taken?" And I was like, "The front row is totally empty. Just go." I gave him a face. I know I gave him a face. I was like, "No, not taken. I guess."
You're a Christian martyr.
It's just like I could have gone down. I could have just gone down to the front row myself, but the front row. At the Royal, in the small house, which is where this was, seats like 85 people. That front row is about 8 feet away from the screen. you'd be in their mouths if you sit in the front row. So I didn't give up my seat, because I like to sit in the back.
Yes. So you had to sit next to the tracksuit guy.
I sat next to the tracksuit.
Speaking of Christian martyrs, by the way, you are going to see...
I am going to go see Persecuted.
Yes.
Sometime this weekend. It's a new Christian movie about a guy who's persecuted for being a Christian.
Because that happens.
Because that totally happens in America. I know it happens in other countries.
Yes.
Legitimately, but it's not happening here.
For American Christians, the idea of persecution is that not getting the last word.
And not getting to squash people they don't like.
Right,
basically.
Yes. Yeah. And not having their own brand of Sharia law is persecution. all right, so that's this week. We have a ton of great letters.
Well, we have DVD recs.
Oh, sure, yes. Mine is, speaking of the great French directors of the New Wave, this week Criterion is releasing this amazing Jacques Demy box set, which includes Lola, Bay of Angels, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, The Young Girls of Rochefort, including Agnès Varda's The Young Girls Turn 25 documentary with English subtitles, which I'm very excited about.
Do you have this yet?
No, hopefully sending it this week.
I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah.
Young Girls at 25.
Yeah, Donkey Skin and another musical of his that I haven't seen, Une Chambre en Ville.
Oh, it's got Donkey Skin?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Is Model Shop in there?
Nope.
No?
It's not the complete Demy, but it's...
Why not?
I don't know. Ask them.
Why aren't you in charge of everything?
I ask myself that every day.
I was going to have one different recommendation, but you just told me before the... show before we started recording that not only is Destroy All Monsters back in print starting Tuesday,
correct,
on DVD,
yes,
and the
not
Legend
on Blu-ray,
and The Legend of Billie Jean comes out on Tuesday on Blu-ray,
yes.
So this is a great week for people who are great and who love great movies that are named Destroy All Monsters and The Legend of Billie Jean. I was going to talk about another movie that was, like, completely esoteric, and then I thought, no, this is an urgent situation that Destroy All Monsters and The Legend of Billie Jean are available.
We passed this way but once.
Yeah. All right. We have a ton of letters.
We do. We asked you for funny... movie theater.
We may get to some of those today.
Oh, really? We're not even going to get to
We're backlogged on letters.
Oh, man. All right. Yeah. Well, anyway, you guys
We may get to those.
You guys have sent us some very funny stories about things that happened to you at the movies, and we will be sharing those, and we still welcome more of them at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. By the way, just a quick plug, T-shirts are on their way. So if you pre-ordered a shirt, you will be getting yours soon. If you haven't ordered a shirt yet, now would be a great time.
I expect that they will show up this week.
Probably early next week, actually.
You think?
Yeah.
How long does it take?
We didn't do the rush, so it's like a 2-week turnaround.
Oh, I see.
But anyway, so we're very excited about that. And if you have not ordered a shirt yet...
Does the rush cost more?
Yes.
Oh.
You still can. PayPal.
They don't just do it because they like to be nice to people who are in a hurry.
No. PayPal is $20.
I don't understand things about business.
Clearly not. PayPal is $20 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you include your shirt size and your mailing address.
Yeah.
And it's $20 inside the U.S. If you're not inside the U.S., let us know. And
it's going to cost like $1,000.
We'll let you know how much it costs to
ship a shirt.
If you
live in another country, it's going to be like $1,000.
Not $1,000.
So PayPal is $1,000.
Stop. Okay, letters.
It's Sean.
Okay.
Yes, that's Sean. Sean Who Gets High.
Oh!
Remember Sean Who Gets High?
Oh, Sean Who Gets High, okay.
Back again with 100% less buffoonery this time. I'd love nothing more than to explain what's happened in terms of the letters I've sent and the confusion that's engulfed our correspondence. But with the 1-week gap between me writing to you guys and you guys being kind enough to read my letters on your show, any attempt, it's been more than 1 week now, attempt at establishing a cogent timeline would come off like email inception at this point.
Whoa. And
no one has time for that. Especially since I feel like I'm inching very close to becoming your guys' most annoying listener with my stoned antics. I apologize.
It's not annoying at all.
Never apologize for being high, Sean. No. Do not.
Just don't drive.
Now I have a question with which I'm hoping to restore some of the class I feel I've siphoned from your previous episodes. Is cinema as we know it dying?
Mm.
It's going to get killed in the purge. So the answer is yes.
That's the question?
Is the dichotomy between TV's... I'll read the whole thing.
Okay.
And then we'll discuss.
Okay.
Is the dichotomy between TV's golden age and Hollywood's big-budget superhero craze foreshadowing the extinction of the latter medium? Or at least in terms of risk. When Dave spoke about the new X-Men film, he repeated several times that he enjoyed it, and films like it. But at the end of the day, all the big-budget films meld into one shiny, brain-dead two-hour spectacle with no emotional or dramatic lasting power. In the 80s and 90s, big-budget fare had heart and soul, and the studios, well, not always, and the studios would take risks to add nuance and brains to the commercial films. Not always. Now everything is about branding, franchising, and PG-13 special effects, films that appeal to the global market. The marketing costs are way too high to allow the industry to function any other way. And I can't help but feel like we're getting too much sugar in our cinematic diets. When is enough too much? Do other people feel the way I do in regards to having solid, interesting films become commercially viable once again, or is it just me? Thank you for your time. Keep up the great work. Best regards, Sean.
Okay.
Who is high?
Interesting question.
I added that bit at the end.
Yes, I figured you did.
Yeah.
I think that what we're seeing is that studios, more than ever, are getting sucked up into the kind of global economy game and trying to appeal to as wide an audience in as many cultures as possible. And so, whereas there was a time where studios would make the crowd pleasers and then generate a certain number of more intimate adult dramas to get, at least for awards consideration or something, I think more and more we're seeing they're less interested in that kind of thing. They all closed their indie divisions, you know.
Fox Searchlight
is still around. That's about the last one. I mean, Paramount Classics, sorta, kinda, but a lot of them don't exist anymore. Like
Warner Brothers will release their stuff under the Warner Brothers name, and they'll do it in like September.
Right. But it's a lot less than it used to be. It's more about the giant superhero movie. However, I think that indie cinema is filling that gap in a lot of ways, and the fact that that the theatrical model is becoming less of an important factor makes it more possible for indie filmmakers to get their stuff out there. I mean, granted, as Manola and other people pointed out, there's now kind of a glut of that stuff, and it's hard to weed through and figure out what it is. But I think in a world where a movie like Boyhood exists, we cannot completely give up on cinema. There's always going to be interesting storytellers and interesting voices, and they're going to get their work out there one way or another.
But they're not going to. It's not going to come from a big studio, though.
Exactly. However,
unless it's on accident.
Well, exactly. But here's the interesting thing, though. Young people aren't going to the movies as much anymore.
Right.
They aren't interested. They don't see the theatrical experience as being essential to watching movies. They've been growing up on devices and seeing it's there, so they don't necessarily run out in the numbers that they used to. I'm wondering at what point the studios realize that. Because we've been operating for decades now on the 14-year-old boy model, on the 14-year-old boy repeat customer model.
Right.
But then every time a movie comes out that, say, women in their 30s want to see, and then it has a strong opening weekend,
right.
The studio treats it like this crazy unicorn,
yeah.
And eventually that's going to become part of the business model I think they're going to realize, oh, wait, this is an audience that exists, and as long as we don't spend more than X amount of money, we can actually, like a movie like The Other Woman, which wasn't particularly good, but it made money. It was successful because there's an audience that wants to see that stuff. So, I mean, I think everybody, there is superhero fever is happening, and like every other genre, it will play itself out. It will outstay its welcome, and there will be something else. And I mean, yes, you're right. The studios are way more interested in making movies that are easily translated into Mandarin, but that doesn't mean that there's not good stuff out there, and that there's not good stuff out there that even if you aren't in a major metropolitan market, you can still access. I just watched, Joe Swanberg's Happy Christmas yesterday on my TV. Well, got it on Amazon,
And it opens at the New Art next.
It opens next Friday. Theatrically.
Yeah.
I think that it's. Cinema is changing and evolving and perhaps becoming less recognizable to what we thought it used to be, but that's what it's always done from the Nickelodeons onward.
Go watch Jean-Luc Godard's film Socialism on your phone. That's my advice. Hi, David Alonso. Dave White almost got me into trouble. I was binge listening, so I don't remember exactly which episode this was, perhaps the Easter Sunday one. In any case, I was out for a jog while listening to this particular episode. Why would anyone want to run places?
Health.
Yes.
In quotes.
Alonzo was trying to be his usual professional self.
Yes.
And describing a survey you wanted the listeners to take.
Mm-hmm.
The freewheeling Dave White started talking about how it meant let the lowly
professional broadcaster.
The freewheeling Dave White started talking about how that meant Linoleum Knife was looking, although if it's Dave, I should say fixing, to invade our privacy, and will be sending us each a microchip with instructions on how to implant them into our throats using a butter knife. I did say that, didn't I?
You did.
Well, it's still true.
Stop.
I'm not sure what this says about me, but I literally laughed out loud. So you LOL'd.
IRL.
The problem was that at the point where I laughed, the trail I was running on was very near, about 20 or 30 feet, a tee box on a golf course. Yay! I win!
Well, look, as long as you didn't have an air horn like in Jackass...
As a foursome was getting ready to tee up. Being a golfer myself, I'm sorry, you jog and you golf?
He listens to the show, be nice.
If he listens to this show, he should know he's in for some insulting coming his way. Jogging is bad. Golf is boring. take that and listen to what I say, because I'm giving you advice about your life.
And golf courses have an enormous carbon footprint.
Being a golfer myself, I know that golfers don't like sudden noises. Once I realized I actually laughed out loud, I picked up my pace and didn't look back. I didn't want you to lose a listener.
Run, Joey, run.
On a completely different topic, while I enjoy your new theme music, I do miss the meanderings through your cassette collection. Mm. Have you considered... That is, by the way, what is happening at the beginning. When you hear that, the noisy, ka-chunk, clicky, ka-chunky thing, the music is on a cassette. If you're a new listener, back when we first started, we used to alternate from our cassette collection intro music, and then we realized that...
Maybe we'd get sued.
And so
our generous friend Blue.
Our friend Blue made us some theme music. And I'm working on getting us some more theme music, too, so it'll alternate like back in the day between different themes.
My lovely melodious pop and Dave's harsh noise squonk.
Correct. So anyway, have you considered using From Your Personal Collection as an outro? That's from Bob.
Yeah, we would still get sued.
Yeah. So that can never happen. Dear Dave, Candyface White, and Alonzo, Duralde, you didn't know that was your new nickname, did you? First, happy birthday to Dave. So this letter is 7 weeks old.
And happy birthday to Jess Kubis.
Yeah, Jess, happy birthday.
Now get off our back.
Yeah. Second, I want to thank you for the continued enjoyment I get from these podcasts. I look forward to Sunday night as I consider listening to you my reward for either a long week at work or a long weekend of editing my dissertation papers. Dissertation chapters. Mm. Sorry. Smart people listen to this podcast.
That's right. Doctoral candidates.
Listening to Dave detail the last 6 months of his life. Oh, wait. So this is fairly recent, this letter. Okay. It's not from my birthday. Ah. For anybody who didn't hear that, I talked about how the last 6 months of my life were going to be.
Oh, not the previous six, the final six.
The final 6 months of my life, when I'm 101 or two and begin to die.
And you are given a six-month window by your notice physician. Yeah.
So that I can have it all organized.
Uh-huh. Because that's going to happen.
I explained. I have a plan. It's all right. I've got a list. It's in my at a glance. How it's all going to happen.
Yes, let's not rehash that.
No, you just go back and listen to an earlier episode from a week or two or three ago. I don't remember.
It was the last week. The one we talked about mattresses.
Anyway, listening to Dave detail the last and or, you know, the final 6 months of his life, including taking to his bed, was one of the funniest things I have ever heard. Thank you. Made perfect by the inclusion that Alonzo must die before Dave, lest he end up in a messy apartment. That is true. You recently asked for amusing movie theater anecdotes. Aha. Here comes one. Well, here is mine. Several years back, I went to see The Simpsons movie. It was an evening show in a theater. The scene... It was in an evening show in a theater that was in a heavily African-American city. I guess the percentage of the population in this city is mostly African-American.
Right.
The scene where, which is the thing we know, are they here at the door?
Yes.
Are people knocking on our door?
Yeah.
All right, hang on. Did you pause it?
No, keep talking.
Are we have people, our breakfast guests are at the door. Now our breakfast guests are walking in the door. Hello, breakfast guests. You're going to get a greeting personally from me when we're done with this podcast.
Hello.
So, the scene when Lisa was doing her Inconvenient Truth presentation about the quality of water in the river concludes with her warning that the water quality is black. Lenny, sitting next to Carl, exclaims, "That's the worst color there is." Sorry, Carl. The theater audience, including myself, burst out laughing, which, you know, that was the point of the joke. Then one lone voice popped up as the laughter was dying down to say, "That ain't funny." Totally serious. And it made people start laughing all over. On a side note, I finally saw the remake of Carrie, which was a pointless waste of time. However, all that was going through my head was Alonzo saying, in my day, they had faces. And he was totally correct.
That's right.
Thank you for the fantastic show. Please keep talking about mattress shopping malls. Who is the brains in your operation? In addition to your insightful and intriguing discussions of the cinema, insert Dave White farting noise here. Best, Rebecca. Right, that's Rebecca. It. That's it for letters, because our breakfast pals are here.
Indeed.
And we have to give them breakfast.
We do. So, as always, we thank you for listening. We thank Blue for our wonderful theme music. You can get his new album, To Hell With You, and find out about the rest of his stellar career at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia.com. Check out ChristyLemire.com. If you are a SiriusXM listener, listen to The Frank DeCaro Show and Derek and Romaine. And in the podcast universe, check out the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Schmoes Know, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes, and if you want to leave us a review there, that would be great. It helps other people find the show. You can also stream us at Stitcher Radio and TheLounge.com, or on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, which if you haven't liked yet, please go do. More than 1,000 of you have, and we appreciate it. You can follow us on Twitter, at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at TVTag.com. Drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. And that's also the PayPal address to get a t-shirt. Or you can PayPal $1.99 each for our 4 Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes. We are going to be taping the Josie and the Pussycats commentary soon.
After Outfest.
After Outfest. Yeah. It's just been crazy. We will get to
also,
it.
Also, there's something more important than just liking our stupid Facebook page.
What's that?
Making your friends listen to the show.
Yes. We don't...
Be our street team.
We don't really advertise.
Do it.
You are our marketers. You are our word-of-mouth makers. So if you like this show and you know other people with a similar sense of humor or liking of the movies or commute to fill, send them our way and maybe they'll like it too.
They don't have to have a sense of humor.
Nah, not necessarily.
We're not that funny.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. So thank you for listening.
I mean, you aren't that funny.
Yeah,
I'm pretty great.
It's my cross to bear. All right, we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.